First case on our calendar, 08-1693, State of Ohio versus Michael Arnold. Mr. Strait.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court and Ms. Bond. I'm David Strait. I'm here this morning on behalf of the appellant, Michael Scott Arnold. With the court's leave, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Mr. Arnold was convicted of rape based in large part on...
Can you pull the microphone? I'm having a little difficult time hearing you.
Is that better, sir?
Let's try that.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Arnold was convicted of rape based in large part on the admission of unsworn out-of-court statements made by the alleged victim, his 4-year-old daughter, to a forensic medical examiner employed by the Center for Child and Family Advocacy, a child advocacy center here in Columbus, Ohio. We contend that the admission of this testimony violated the Confrontation Clause as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court in Crawford and Davis because these statements were testimonial in nature. They were testimonial in nature because they are an account of past events. There was no ongoing emergency, and this is the equivalent of trial testimony. And the Confrontation Clause would require that testimony in its veracity to be tested by cross-examination, which did not occur here. The critical issue, I think, is whether this interview by the forensic medical examiner, who was not a police officer, is nevertheless subject to the Confrontation Clause because this interview was the functional equivalent of a police interview. I base our claim that it was on three different points, the first of which is the statutory language which creates child advocacy centers under Ohio law. Second, how this interview occurred, what happened. And third, case law interpreting similar types of interviews in other jurisdictions, which has deemed them to be testimonial in nature and subject to the Confrontation Clause prohibition.
Mr. Strait, how does a so-called a victim of this alleged conduct find her way to the center? Is it routinely done when someone brings a person to a hospital or to a doctor's office? Is there a pro forma sort of conduct that causes them to be there, or is there someone's discretion involved in deciding who should be viewed by the center?
I think it depends on the facts and circumstances. My understanding is sometimes there's a referral by the police. In this particular case, the paramedic indicated that he took mother and child to the center, accompanied by a police officer. It's also my understanding from reading some of the case law from other jurisdictions, there can be a direct referral from a medical professional or from a children's services caseworker, or the parent can initiate it on his or herself, simply making the referral that way.
Do we know whether the referrals are based upon the referring person's belief that there has been criminal conduct, or are they referred because they think that this victim needs counseling, needs something more than just the immediate treatment that they receive in a doctor's office?
I think that my understanding of what happened in this case was there was suspicion of criminal conduct that gave rise to the connection between the child and the center. And in looking at some of the other case law from other jurisdictions, it looks like in most of the cases, there has to be some kind of concern that criminal conduct had happened, that the child had been abused. The statutory mandate is somewhat limited to cases involving abuse, and it seems to me that it requires more than just a suspicion that the child needs counseling, rather that something happened here along the lines of abuse which requires further investigation.
Well, counsel, exactly what happened in this case, the night of the incident, the child was taken to Children's Hospital, and your facts say a rape kit was administered. I don't know what that means, but something was done that night at the hospital, was it not?
That's my understanding from the record, Your Honor. And then subsequent to that, the child was returned home, And then the next morning...
At 9 o'clock.
That's my understanding. At 9 o'clock, the child and mother went to the center, which is located in proximity to the emergency room at Children's, but it's in a different building.
Right.
And the interview occurred there.
And there was a... At 9 o'clock the next morning, there was a police detective and a Children's Services employee there also?
That's correct, and the record would also indicate there was a victim's advocate there as well. This is not the same detective who was the lead detective investigating this case, but a detective was present. These people were behind a one-way mirror, as was equipment that allowed them to videotape it and generate a DVD, which was given to law enforcement for purposes of prosecution.
And at the trial, what other evidence other than this, was the video shown of the child?
Yes.
Interview? What else was presented indicating potential criminal conduct on the part of your client?
We have testimony from the child's mother describing that she heard some strange noises upstairs. It went upstairs, the door was locked. She forced her way in when apparently my client came to the door, noticed his clothing was disheveled, noticed later that the child, who was on an air mattress, as I recall, her underwear was at her feet. Then there was the testimony.
Did she testify as to what the child said that night?
There is an indication in the record that the child made a statement that daddy was being mean, but I'm not sure that it's connected with any specific anything on the part of the defendant.
Right.
Then there was testimony as well from the nurse practitioner who conducted a physical examination of the child, who noticed, who discovered two abrasions of the hymen on the child. But again, the source of those, if you separate out what the child had to say, were we to determine that the statements made to the child, forensic medical interviewer, were inadmissible, there's not a lot to connect Mr. Arnold to this.
Didn't the child also say something to an EMS person who came to the home that night when the police were called?
I believe that gentleman testified again to a comment about daddy's being mean. I don't think the child said anything about any sexual misconduct on the part of her father.
Okay.
Seemed upset, as did the mother, is what the EMS person testified to. Now, the Child Advocacy Center is something of a hybrid creation of statute, and it is described in various points as a multidisciplinary entity designed to bring together different people who may have a concern regarding child abuse.
Counsel, is the center designated strictly for law enforcement purposes?
No, I don't think it is.
That's not the sole reason this unit, this center, is in existence,
it's correct? Not the sole reason, but it is a reason.
And there was no police officer doing the questioning of this child for the video, is that correct?
That's correct.
And it was a social worker that was trained to deal with children of sexual abuse?
Her official title per her testimony was forensic medical interviewer. She did testify regarding her training, knowledge, skill, and experience with respect to interviewing children.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
Okay, and then there, I mean, in addition, I believe, based on the briefs that we have, that a purpose for an interview such as this would be to determine exactly the nature of the contact or the alleged contact, to determine whether there was further testing for any venereal disease, whether there was a psychological treatment or analysis or examination that should be conducted, that this was kind of a follow-up to determine the most appropriate services for not only this child, but any victim that would be in this position. Is that correct?
It is correct that there was testimony regarding that. It is also correct that her testimony was taken, was recorded, and was used for purposes of criminal prosecution.
Do you think that the 4-year-old knew that this might be used at trial?
No, but I don't know that that's the standard either, because first off, if the primary purpose here, or a primary purpose, was to record past events for purposes of potential criminal prosecution, it's testimonial pursuant to Crawford and Davis.
But you're saying that's the primary or a primary. Primary would suggest to me that there's one being the primary. That's not admitted to be the primary purpose of this interview with this child, this protocol that is established by the center. That's your take on it, that this is a primary purpose is for law enforcement.
That's correct. And that's in line with what we've seen other courts in other states look at in making a determination that this is testimonial. For example, in North Dakota versus Blue, we have a similar circumstance where an officer didn't participate in questioning, but watched through a one-way mirror. The North Dakota Supreme Court determined it to be testimonial. Similarly, in State versus Hooper out of Idaho, we have that. And in an interesting case out of the Illinois Supreme Court called N. Ray Rolandis G., the interview was conducted under observation but not participation by police officers. And a video was developed and turned over, and the Illinois Supreme Court determined that to be testimonial hearsay that should have been subject to cross-examination.
In this particular case, the social worker examiner was not directed by the police officer that was behind the mirror. Is that true?
That's correct, as was the case in North Dakota versus Blue, Hooper, and Rolandis G. So while, had that occurred, there would certainly be no question about the extent of police involvement. But the police presence and the fact that the police obtained this DVD and it was used for purposes of prosecution is enough to trigger the Confrontation Clause protection.
Would there have been anything differently done by the social worker interviewing this four-year-old if there wasn't a police officer behind the mirror?
We don't know whether it would have, the interview would have been preserved in DVD form. There's no clue about that. It's, in my experience, it's not common for social workers to develop such video recordings of an interview.
At this particular center, you're saying this is an anomaly?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying in my experience of dealing with
social workers. Do you have a lot of experience with this center?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
So if this social worker had conducted this exam the morning after the alleged incident, and there had been no police officer or other third parties observing behind a window, you would not have a confrontation issue?
Probably not, without any kind of police involvement. Were this strictly an examination by a social worker in the field or in an office, I don't think the Confrontation Clause protections would be triggered.
So putting a one-way mirror up and putting a police officer behind it who in no way participates in the interview but simply watches it converts it into testimony, in your opinion?
It does, in my opinion, and that's also consistent with what these cases I've just cited would hold.
Would your answer be the same if the agreement by which the center operated required the center to assume that there is no two-way glass or glass that behind which a law enforcement officer can view the interview, assume that the agreement requires the center to provide law enforcement with a transcript or a record or information deriving from the interview, that's a requirement. Would your answer be the same?
Were that agreement to require those things?
Yeah.
I think the Confrontation Clause would apply in such circumstances because it presupposes police involvement at some level in the investigation. So the information is archived for purposes of use for potential prosecution.
So in your view, the officer does not have to be on site viewing the, albeit out of sight of the child, viewing the interview?
No, I don't think so, but I think that certainly supports our position.
Your proposition of law that you've stated to us is very broad. Admission of out-of-court statements made by a child to an interviewer employed by a child advocacy agency or center violates the Constitution. There must be conditions. You just gave one condition to Justice Stratton. What do we do with that broad proposition of law?
I think the proposition can be narrowed in such a fashion that it would apply specifically to the facts the court has before it. And we could narrow it by suggesting that when law enforcement is present during the interview, when the questioning is in a question and answer format designed to elicit information regarding suspected abuse, and that it's memorialized or recorded in such a fashion that it can be used at trial, the Confrontation Clause is violated when that's introduced without cross-examination.
But we don't have to invent a test here, do we, Mr. Strait?
No, I don't think we do.
It seems as though the case law has either put us in the category of the objective witness test or the primary purpose test. And shouldn't we be applying the law and trying to determine which is the better test that applies to the facts in this case?
I would certainly agree with that and suggest that what Crawford tells us is that when we're dealing with testimonial statements, and again, I'm contending that the statements in question are testimonial, those require cross-examination in order to satisfy the confrontation
clause. I don't think
there's
an issue about testimonial statements requiring cross-examination. I think the issue that we're wrestling with is, what is the appropriate test to utilize in examining the facts here? Should we apply the primary purpose, being the furtherance of a criminal investigation, or the objective witness test, that the witness knew or should have known that the statement was going to be utilized at a later time? Isn't that the real issue for us?
I think it is the real issue, and I would agree with that, and I would suggest to the court that when we have a nexus between a non-police interviewer and the police, that satisfies the requirement of testimonial statements in order to trigger the Confrontation Clause.
Is this child center akin to a Dove unit or not?
I think because it is a different creation and it's created, if not by statute, the statute creates the context in which the agreement for the creation of it occurs. So, frankly, I don't know what creates a Dove unit. I don't think there's a specific statute dealing with it. Now, the statute in question says that the players in this multidisciplinary task force that's part of a CAC includes police and prosecution. I don't know that the Dove unit has a similar statute that says who the players are. So to answer your question is, I don't think they're the same.
Thank you.
Counsel, what would your position be if there was an examination being conducted in this particular of a child and the allegation of sexual abuse, and the social worker examiner determines that there appears to be a need for police involvement? In other words, the police were not involved to begin with. And there is that duty to report that the social worker would be under suspected child abuse, sexual abuse. What would your position be then on this?
Assuming that the child made some statements to that social worker before the social worker determined a need for police involvement, am I understanding the question correctly, Your
right.
Honor?
And then there's and it's recorded and it's memorialized and there is the later use at trial.
That may well be testimonial as well. I don't know that the time the police officer becomes involved is dispositive. It's how the testimony is used.
Well, I think when you answered Justice Stratton's question, you placed an emphasis on the fact that there was a police officer present.
I think that is an important factor, but I don't know that it's a dispositive factor.
So, counsel, are you saying that every statement made by a child should be subject to cross-examination? Is that where you're heading?
I think every
based on your responses to these scenarios, it seems that if you're looking at it from the point of view that if the statements are being offered into evidence, they are testimonial and therefore should be subject to cross-examination if we carry it to the ultimate conclusion.
I think Crawford requires that if we're talking about testimonial statements, and I think we are in this case.
So if it's offered into evidence, if it's a statement offered into evidence at trial, you're suggesting that it's testimonial.
I think, Your Honor, if I understand the question correctly, if the statement is obtained in such circumstances that it's reasonable to infer that it's not a circumstance where an emergency exists, but rather the declarant witness is testifying or is providing information about what has happened, the use of that information, that makes the information testimonial, and its use, per Crawford, requires cross-examination.
So you're suggesting that maybe the excited utterance is the only thing that would not fall in this category?
I think a statement purely for purposes of medical diagnosis and treatment would probably not be barred, but I don't think that's what we have here.
Right, so except for excited utterance and purposes of medical treatment, any other statement made by a child that's offered into a criminal prosecution would be considered testimonial, subject to cross-examination in your view?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Strait.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Bond.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, Mr. Strait. Direct and overt police participation must be found in an interview to show that the primary purpose of that interview was to preserve facts for later prosecution. That is always the threshold inquiry. Without such a showing, those statements are not equivalent to testimony.
Well, counsel, you say in your brief that the whole purpose of this interview was to determine what further treatment was necessary for this child. The Davis test, you don't dispute the Davis test applies here, do you?
Actually, Stahl applies. Because there's a challenge to who is actually doing the interview and the purpose of the interview, the state's proposition of law bridges the gap. We're saying Davis would apply if the primary purpose, and of course Seiler would apply, if the primary purpose is law enforcement driven. Without a showing of direct and overt police participation, you can't make the showing that this is.
Well, let me walk you through that. This incident occurred late at night, and this child was taken as a result of what occurred and what the mother thought occurred to Children's Hospital and examined and a rape kit used that night. Is that not correct?
That's correct. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right. And so I don't know what all is involved in that, but presumably any medical questions regarding any medication that the child would need with respect to venereal disease and that kind of thing was determined at that time.
No, Your Honor, it was not. The child was essentially in shock, extraordinarily agitated, and of course this was a very late hour for a four-year-old. She was taken to Children's because there was a concern that there was some sort of life-threatening issue at the time, and the paramedic took the mother and the child directly to the emergency room. There was no indication in this record that a police officer was present with them. That was emergency medical treatment at that time.
And then they're told to return the next morning at 9 o'clock.
That's correct. And my review of the record indicates that it was hospital personnel that informed the mother that she could take the child for a full comprehensive evaluation.
And somehow miraculously, the police department managed to be there at the same time that the mother and child were.
Are you talking about the CAC?
Yeah.
That officer was not related to this case. There is an officer who observes the interviews, and I believe that's part of how the CAC is designed.
So there's an officer there all the time?
I'm not sure about all the time. I know for purposes of this case, pardon me, that there was an officer stationed there, but the full details of the CAC center were not made part of this record. The memorandum of understanding that defines the participants' roles is not in this record. As a general matter, I believe that the officer is there. Whether or not he has offices there, I'm not sure. There was not a prosecutor present. There was only.
Okay. Now, you said this is out because this interview is all for the purposes of medical determinations and determinations of what additional medical treatment, additional counseling the child needs.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it customary when one goes to the doctor or to see a nurse to have one's discussion about what medical needs you need to be videotaped?
Not necessarily videotaped, but certainly there is a record made by any medical provider of what you're telling that medical provider. The reasons for the videotape, again, are not in this record. I think it has to be remembered, though, that
Was it customary for a police officer and a children's service worker to be on the other side of a window when one goes in for a route for medical care or medical advice?
No, Your Honor, there is not. But if this child had been taken to, for example, a private pediatrician, that pediatrician's next call would be to inform local authorities or children's services because they are mandated reporters. So the information is going to the appropriate authorities anyway, regardless of whether they're there on scene or not.
And the purpose of the centers is to not subject a child to repeated interviews by all these different entities. It's like a one-stop shops to reduce the trauma to any potential victim or any alleged victim, is it not?
That's my understanding. Again, it's not detailed in this record.
And if you didn't have this setup, which has come as a result of a lot of study and work by a lot of different people, then you would have to have the police officer interview the child, prosecutor interview the child, social workers. You would have multiple parties interviewing the child repeatedly about this incident. And the goal of the CDC Center is you have one interview and everybody observes it, but they don't really get to participate and ask questions.
That's correct.
And is the purpose of the center to investigate, gather evidence for prosecution?
No, Your Honor, absolutely
not. That is
not
a statutory purpose?
Absolutely not. The purpose of the CAC is to treat their patient. And the focus of the social worker's questioning was to guide the medical interview that immediately followed her.
Pardon me, please?
The purpose, the social worker's purpose in interviewing the child was to gather a medical history for the nurse practitioner who conducted the examination immediately following that interview.
That's what confuses me. I would have thought the medical history would have been taken in the emergency room at the time that the child was presented with the EMS.
There's no indication that a history was given. I believe the mother wanted the child seen immediately because of the child's behavior that night. Again, there was a lot of shock.
And there was
and trauma.
No history taken on the emergency visit with the EMS?
Well, certainly the mother would have indicated to the emergency physician what caused them to come to the emergency room. But there's no indication in this record that the child was questioned at all.
And do the medical records from the emergency visit indicate that follow-up should be done at this center?
That's not in this record, Your Honor.
So we really don't know what the medical personnel may have told the child's mother.
That's correct. Without a showing of direct and overt police participation in an interview, that interview is not the same as the circumstances that generate testimony. And to that end, this case resembles Moutarte and Stahl. Like those cases, the statements at issue here were made for the purposes of medical treatment and diagnosis. The defendant's attempt to equate this interview with a police interview failed.
Well, counsel, let me take you back to Davis. That is the controlling Supreme Court decision, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
This is a direct quote. This refers to the earlier sentence about statements that are non-testimonial. It says, they are testimonial when the circumstances objectively indicate that there is no such ongoing emergency. You would concede the next morning there's no ongoing emergency.
That's correct.
And the primary purpose of the interrogation is to establish or prove past events. Was that the primary purpose?
That's what Davis says, but in this...
Weren't the questions about past events?
The questions were about the child's past events, yes.
Potentially relevant to later criminal prosecution. End of quote.
Correct. That's what Davis says.
Now how do you get out of that?
Because the primary purpose of this interview was not to preserve evidence for later prosecution. The primary purpose of this interview was to treat the patient.
The primary purpose of the interrogation is to establish or prove past events.
That's correct. The threshold inquiry in Davis has to be police interrogation, though. Davis deals with a police interrogation, as do Crawford and Hammond. This case does
so
not involve...
Davis does only applies when the police interrogate?
Yes, Your Honor. Davis, Crawford, and Hammond all address police interrogation and have not been extended
Where
by the
in
Supreme
Davis
Court.
Does it say it only applies to police interrogation?
I don't have a pinpoint site for that. The case itself is about a police interrogation.
Police weren't doing the interrogation, but
yes, Your Honor.
It doesn't say that this is limited to police interrogation, does it?
No, it doesn't say it's limited to, but when you look at what the Supreme Court is addressing, they're addressing government abuses, and they go back to the Sir Walter Riley case, and they're talking about situations that elicit testimony, formal interviews by government officials. And they repeatedly talk about the involvement of the police in eliciting statements for the purposes of criminal prosecution. That is not what's going on in this case.
Okay, so what test do you say applies then?
I say the test in Stahl applies, and you're looking at the objective expectations of this declarant. And there's nothing in this record that says the 4-year-old had any idea that a police person, a police individual, was watching this interview. The 4-year-old responded to the questions for purposes of furthering her treatment.
Well, counsel, one of the I think cruxes here is, and it was in Davis, is in Davis you had a 911 operator who was deemed to be an agent of law enforcement just by virtue of her responsibilities, her employment. But then that was an ongoing emergency. There were, you know, communications that were deemed non-testimonial because of the ongoing emergency. And here, you know, there's no establishment that this social worker was an agent of law enforcement, first of all, which distinguishes it from one part of Davis. And as far as the ongoing emergency, certainly it wasn't an emergency for apprehension purposes or to remove the child from the immediate, but you know, I question whether it would be an emergency to have medical treatment, comprehensive medical treatment and psychological treatment.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. I think in Davis what they're talking about is an immediate life-threatening injury or apprehension of a suspect immediately following a crime. In this case, we don't have a record showing that there's a life-threatening injury. What we have, though, is treatment that is essential for the 4-year-old to get. And to get to the treatment stage, you have to understand what happened to her. And she needed to tell what happened to her to get that treatment. There's no indication that the child was aware of the police presence in this case. She certainly was not informed, and I think it's significant that Carrie Marshall says she's not directed by the police.
What treatment occurred other than the examination by the nurse practitioner after the interview?
My understanding in this case is that there was counseling ordered. The record is silent on whether there was a question of sexually transmitted diseases since, of course, the offender was known.
Did counseling occur?
Has counseling occurred? I believe it has, but I'm afraid the record is silent on that matter. It wasn't.
Now, the objective witness test for a 4-year-old, the child has no comprehension of what's going on.
This child did have no comprehension of what was going on in terms of criminal activity, in terms of what a trial would be, anything like that.
I shouldn't say no, but very limited. And is that the test, or should the test be what would a reasonable person understand?
No, Your Honor. Stahl and Moutart both focus on the expectations of that particular declarant. Moutart has factors specifically addressing that declarant's age and cognitive ability, and Stahl supports that position as well.
So looking at it from your perspective, in every case, a child ought to be able to testify because a child cannot have a reasonable expectation that it would be used in a criminal prosecution.
The child's testimony, of course, deals with competency, which what Moutart addresses. Whether the child was competent or not is addressed at trial. But I think for purposes of applying Stahl and Moutart to the facts here, we have a child who does not know the implications of what will happen the way an adult would. And certainly under Stahl, if those statements were non-testimonial admissible, these statements certainly are as well, because we're talking about a 4-year-old.
But that's my question. When you're talking about children, you would still have us apply the Stahl test. And since you have a child this young, you would automatically say then that it's not testimonial.
I don't think we can say automatically, because I think children can vary. Their cognitive abilities, where they are mentally, will vary by age. 1 4-year-old may not be equivalent to another 4-year-old. So I think the facts have to be examined in those particular cases.
So you would use both
the general rule,
both the objective witness as well as the primary purpose test. You're saying in both of those situations here, the situation would not be non-testimonial.
The statements are non-testimonial. The first inquiry, because there's a challenge to the identity of the questioner, the allegation being that this is a front for law enforcement, you have to apply the primary purpose test, and the state's proposition of law being need to show direct and overt police participation. Mm-hmm. When you show that these statements were in fact for medical purpose, then we apply Stahl and Moutard.
Okay.
Counsel, following up on what Justice Lansing was asking, would you agree that an adult of reasonable ability to comprehend would understand that these questions could and would, in fact, lead to criminal prosecution?
Yes, Your Honor, an adult could understand that, and some children might. But again, it gets back to the threshold inquiry of the purpose. When you're talking to your medical provider, you don't go in there to provide testimony for future possible criminal prosecution. You go in there to get treatment, to get assistance for whatever it is that is ailing you.
But you would understand if there's a video camera there and you're asked, was there, where did he put his penis? Or where did he put his mouth? You would understand that very well could lead, what you say, could very well lead to criminal prosecution.
Yes, Your Honor. And in this case, the video camera is not apparent to the declarant. Nothing suggests to the declarant that anyone else is watching. There is observation through a one-way mirror, and that recording is made out of the sight of that child.
I'd like to, you raised a purpose, and I'd like to test your view of the statute that authorizes the creation of a child advocacy center. .426, as you know, and then the regulations that follow in authorizing the established counties to establish the centers identifies the entities that should be participants in the memorandum of understanding. The first one is the Public Children's Services Agency, logically, but the second one is representatives of any county or municipal law enforcement agency serving the county that investigate any of the types of abuse specified in the memorandum. And then the next one is the prosecuting attorney who prosecutes any of the types of abuse specified in the memorandum. So what is the purpose of the agency?
The purpose of those statutes and the purpose of the agency is to expedite the information that's obtained in the medical interview to those authorities. That information is going there by statute under Section 421 of that same chapter.
There's nothing mentioned about treatment or counseling, at least in those first two or three paragraphs that would seem to be important, since they're up front in the statute.
426 and 427 discuss that these agencies can participate. The memorandum of understanding is what defines their roles within a working center. The memorandum for Nationwide Children's Hospital is not in this record. But I would submit the fact that the statute recognizes that there are separate participants means that each participant carries on its own and independent role. And in this case, Children's Hospital's employees have a primary purpose and a role to and a duty, in fact, to their patients. And their duty and obligation is to obtain information from the patient for their treatment.
So you would argue, I guess, that the fact that those two entities are stated second, third in the statute as being included in a memorandum of understanding, which means they're part of the disciplinary group, multidisciplinary group, that's we should give no significance to that.
No, I don't think there's any significance that they're allowed to work together. Again, the first section, 421, requires the hospital staff essentially to report suspicions of child abuse. So all that's happening is that information is being expedited through the proper channels. It doesn't vest the hospital employees with an investigatory purpose. It doesn't require them to have criminal training or criminal backgrounds. Hospital employees remain focused on the treatment of
But the General Assembly has clearly said we want the law enforcement agencies to be a part of this process, has it not?
Yes, Your Honor. Part of that process being to obtain the information in as quick a manner as possible so that the investigations as required by other sections by for Children's Services can be expedited as well. The whole purpose behind Chapter 2151 was designed for the best interests of the child and protect the child's health and safety.
I think no one argues about that. We're talking about obviously a very discrete legal issue here about
yes,
confrontation.
Sir.
So nobody's arguing about the purpose of the you know, that there should be such a center or such an activity. That's not the issue. The issue is a testimonial when the child responds to the questions of the social worker.
It is not testimonial because yeah, those
okay, I understand
that's
your
primary
point.
Purpose
yeah.
is medical okay. treatment.
Although, counsel, you're saying that the reason that there are cameras and recording devices are to report the suspected abuse. That's the purpose of the agency, correct?
I don't.
And isn't it whether that reporting of the abuse or suspected abuse then turns into investigation of criminal activity?
Well, first and foremost, I don't think we can say the purpose of the CAC is to investigate crimes. The purpose of that center is to help children and their families that are in crisis.
But didn't you say under point 421 that we're talking about reporting, obligations, the reason for the cameras and so on is to memorialize what is being said. And our question is, does that then convert into actual investigation of crime and police activity?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. And I think first and foremost that there's no evidence as to why the cameras are there, whether that was police-driven or it's simply part of the hospital's procedures. That's certainly not a part of this record. It is possible that the hospitals memorialize not only the child's statements in a written report, but the videos because they are accredited.
So the hospitals videotape all treatment? Is that what you're saying?
All treatment, I don't know. I think all these interviews definitely are videotaped, but whether that's exclusively for the purposes of law enforcement, I can't say. And I think essentially it does not undermine the position that primary purpose of this interview was for medical treatment and diagnosis. Whether the police are passively watching, whether it's recorded and then given to the police is immaterial. Carrie Marshall's duty was to her patient.
Need to sum up.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Without a showing of direct and overt police participation, we can't construe the medical interview as anything other than to protect the child and to elicit statements that were needed for her treatment. These are simply not the type of
Your time is up.
Yes, sir. I would ask this court to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Strait, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, there is a risk here that the proposition advanced by the state would turn the objective witness test into a subjective witness test. The language of Davis, the language of Crawford is very clear that should we be in under that analysis, it's an objective witness. Not only that, the case law is interpreting that as not an objective four-year-old in this case, because what is that, but an objective reasonable person in that context. Finally, this is not the only time these issues have been brought before a state Supreme Court. At least seven sister states have looked at it and found such statements to be testimonial and running afoul of the Confrontation Clause. With that, I'll stand on our briefs and ask the court to reverse.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.